Well, in 1976, here's people who've had some really bad days. In 1976, a 22-year-old Irishman, Bob Finnegan, was crossing the Busy Falls Road in Belfast, where he was struck by a taxi and flung over its roof. The taxi drove away, and as Finnegan lay stunned in the road, another car ran over into him, rolling him into the gutter. It, too, drove on. As a knot of gawkers gathered to examine the magnetic Irishman, he tracks the cars, a delivery van plowed through the crowd, leaving in its wake three injured bystanders and an even more battered Bob Finnegan. When a fourth vehicle came along, the crowd wisely scattered, and only one person was hit, Bob Finnegan. In the space of 2 minutes, Finnegan suffered a fractured skull, broken pelvis, broken leg, and other assorted injuries. Hospital officials said he would recover. That's a really, really bad... I got another one. One more. Just one more. While motorcycling through the Hungarian countryside, Christo Falati came up to a railway line just as the crossing gates were coming down. While he sat idling, he was joined by a farmer with a goat, which the farmer tethered to the crossing gate. You picturing this? A few moments later, a horse and a cart drew up behind Falati, followed in short order by a man in a sports car. When the train roared through the crossing, the horse startled and bit Falati on the arm. Not a man to be trifled with, Falati responded by punching the horse in the head. In consequence, the horse's owner jumped down from his cart and began scuffling with the motorcyclist. The horse, which was not up to this sort of excitement, backed away briskly, smashing the cart into the sports car. At this, the sports car driver leaped out of the car and joined the fray. The farmer came forward to try to pacify the three flailing men. As he did so, the crossing gate arose and his goat was strangled. At last report, the insurance companies are still trying to sort out the claims. Now that's a really, really, really bad day, huh? Well, I guess today's message is all about bad days. Bad days. James chapter 1, verse 2. My brethren, count it all joy when ye fall into diverse temptations, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. But let I can hear you saying that, Curly. I can hear you saying it just like that. Whoopee! Count it all joy. Amen. When ye fall into diverse temptations. When you fall into diverse... I really like the King James. When you fall into, the word it means it's two words, around and fall. It's to fall into something so that you end up being surrounded by it. It's like tripping and falling into a mud puddle, and suddenly you're covered with mud. It's like, you know, jumping into a it's like falling into a swimming pool, and suddenly you're just covered, surrounded. When you fall into diverse temptations, count it all joy. Count it all, to count it, to consider, to account, to think it all, you know, add it all up, and you come up with joy when you encounter, when you fall into diverse temptations. The first thing I want to say is this, is it all starts with your attitude. It all starts with your attitude. Sometimes the worst thing, I hope this can ring some bells here for some of us. Sometimes the worst thing is not really the situation. It's actually our attitude. I want you to look at a verse, Proverbs 15:15. And I want you to see this because this might be one of those things you want to underline and circle. Because this has been a good verse for me. This has been one of those build into your life types of verses when I first some lights went on when I saw this verse. Proverbs 15:15. This is years ago this happened. Proverbs 15:15. All the days of the afflicted are evil, but he that is of a merry heart hath a continual feast. Now, the NIV and the New Living Translation, I'm sorry, doesn't cut it. I don't like it. So I won't even read those. But the King James and the New American Standard, it's all the days of the afflicted are evil, but he that is of a merry heart hath a continual feast. See, you can choose to face your problems in two ways. You can pick path number one. Oh, I am an afflicted person. And then everything that you see is evil. Whether it is or not. But you will see it. Oh no, here comes another one. Oh no, here comes an evil fly through the door. It must be carrying germs and contaminate my house with encephalitis or something. All the days of the afflicted are evil. Woe is me. I am an afflicted person. Now please, I'm not trying to make fun of some of us. Because some of us, we approach life this way. We do. But he says, he that is of a merry heart hath a continual feast. See, it starts with your attitude. It starts with your attitude. Are you going to choose to look at everything negatively, and then you will find yourself, oh, poor, afflicted person, and everything is horrible in my life? Or will you choose to be a person of a merry heart? Now, I've shared this story before, but it's a good one. The family had twin boys whose only resemblance to each other was their looks. If one felt it was too hot, the other one thought it was too cold. If one said the TV was too loud, the other claimed the volume needed to be turned up. Opposite in every way. One was an eternal optimist, the other a doom and gloom pessimist. Just to see what happened, on the twins' birthday, their father loaded the pessimist's room with every imaginable toy and game. The pessimist, with every imaginable toy and game. The optimist's room he loaded with horse manure. That night, the father passed the pessimist's room and found him sitting amid his new gifts, crying bitterly. Why are you crying? The father asked.
Because my friends will be jealous. I'll have to read all these instructions before I can do anything with this stuff. I'll constantly need batteries and my toys will eventually get broken,
answered the pessimist twin. Passing the optimist's room, the father found him dancing for joy in the pile of manure. What are you so happy about? He asked. To which his optimist twin replied, there's got to be a pony in here somewhere. Let that picture stick in your mind. It really does. It all starts with your attitude, gang. It starts with your attitude. You can actually make that choice. You can choose to let everything bum you out and choose to look for everything wrong in a situation. Or you can choose not to. My brethren, count it all joy when ye fall into diverse temptations. The word temptations. Now, I haven't really liked the King James in the past on this phrase, because I think every single modern translation translates this Greek word trials. When you encounter various trials. King James says when you fall into diverse or various different colored temptations. And I have taught Bible studies where I've tried to explain this isn't really temptations towards sin. This is the word is also used to describe trials, hard times, testings. It's true. This is true. But the word is also used to describe temptations as in temptation to sin. And I've had a hard time with that. It's like, well, am I supposed to rejoice when I'm being tempted to sin? Well, in a way, yes. Really, it's no much bigger of a stretch than to rejoice when I fall into different trials. Both of them are pretty stinky when it comes to rejoicing. He says, when you fall into them. Again, the idea, you know, it's the idea of tripping and falling in. These aren't the temptations that you go looking for. These aren't the trials, the tough times that you brought on yourself because you really willfully went into something and caused yourself big trouble. These are the things you fall into. Count it all joy, brethren, when you fall into various, diverse, different sorts of trials and temptations. I want to talk about this in two ways, about the temptation and about the trials, using this word in both ways. First is this, rejoicing in the temptation, rejoicing in the test. First principle, rejoicing in the test. See, don't misunderstand me here. We're not to go looking for temptation so we can be happy. I want to have lots of time for rejoicing, so let's go tempt myself really good. When we find temptation, we're supposed to flee from it. 2 Timothy 2:22, flee youthful lusts, Paul tells Timothy. And you also need to be careful here that you don't misunderstand and think that God is letting you be tempted. God is causing you to be tempted. No, we're going to read it later on tonight in verse 13 of chapter 1. Let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man. So you can't. You don't want to blame the temptation on God. That's why he wants you to be happy about it. No. Jesus also taught us to pray in Matthew 6:13. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. So you want to balance all those things. But we can rejoice in times of temptation because it is a chance to see God show us how to escape. Let me say that again. We can rejoice in times of temptation because it is a chance to see God show us how to escape. Look at 1 Corinthians 10:13. 1 Corinthians 10:13. 1 Corinthians 10:13. There hath no temptation taken or overtaken you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you or not allow you to be tempted above that ye are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape, that ye may be able to bear it. Now, there are several words in the Greek that can be translated trials or testings. Think of how many for temptation. But this is the same Greek word. It's in James for tempt, for temptation, to tempt. The word means an experiment, an attempt, a trial, a proving. The trial of a man's integrity, fidelity, his virtue. It can be the enticement to sin. In 1 Corinthians 10:13 it says, no temptation has overtaken you, but such is common to man. And God is faithful, who will always provide a way of escape. We can rejoice in times of temptation because it is a chance to see God show us how to escape. Every time we are tempted, there will be a door nearby with a sign exit over it. Every time. And whether you give in to the temptation or not, all depends on whether you walk through that door. Every time. It's that way for me. Every time. There's always a way out. I mean, it might be something that you're kind of fiddling around in your head and thinking about this, thinking about that, and you think about this a little more, And then you're really, really thinking about it. I'm really, really thinking about it. And you're about to go do something. And the phone rings. Or something happens to slow you down. And there it is. The door with the exit. The door with the exit. We've been reading in a book called The Prayer of Jabez by Bruce Wilkinson. It's a book that's kind of an exposition of a short little passage in Chronicles where we get the glimpse of one man's simple little prayer. It says 1 Chronicles 4:10. It says this, Jabez called on the God of Israel saying, "Oh, that thou wouldest bless me indeed and enlarge my coast, and that thine hand might be with me, and that thou wouldest keep me from evil, that it may not grieve me, and God grant him that which he requested." God answered that man's prayer. Part of his prayer was, you know, keep me from evil. In talking about this idea of how God would keep us from evil, Bruce Wilkinson shared a personal story. And this is a great, great story. This is what he writes. He says, "Years ago, a cab had picked me up in downtown Chicago and was whisking me down the Kennedy Expressway toward the airport. I slumped in the back seat, exhausted from a week of special meetings at the Moody Bible Institute. God had moved in remarkable ways. I had preached every day and counseled scores of students, 76 to be exact," he kept a log. "Now, heading home, I was physically and spiritually spent. Staring blankly out at the traffic, I reached for the Jabez prayer. Oh Lord, I pleaded, I have no resistance left. I am completely worn out in your service. I can't cope with temptation. Please keep evil far from me today." When I boarded the plane, I found I'd been assigned a middle seat. Not a good start for my flight. And things quickly got worse. The man on my left pulled out a pornographic magazine. "Lord, I thought we had a deal here," I groaned in my spirit, and I looked the other way. But before the plane lifted off, the man on my right opened his briefcase and pulled out his own Skin magazine. At that moment, I didn't have it in me to ask them to change their reading material. I closed my eyes. "Lord," I prayed, "I can't cope with this today. Please chase evil far away." Suddenly, the man on my right swore, folded up his magazine, and put it away. I looked at him to see what had prompted his action. Nothing, as far as I could tell. Then the man on the left looked at him, swore loudly, closed up his magazine too. Again, I could find no apparent reason for his decision. We were over Indiana when I began laughing uncontrollably. They both asked me what was so funny. "Gentlemen," I said, "you wouldn't believe me if I told you." Sometimes we fall into temptation. We can't avoid it. We find ourselves surrounded in it. And we face a situation where we are being tested. Will we pass the test? Will we be ready? Will we take the exit? See, Bruce's exit had to do with him closing his eyes and praying. I think sometimes I look at temptations as things that I'm not going to be able to resist. You know, there are certain temptations that I there's chocolate in the house. You know what I'm saying? And the children have loaded up from Halloween, and it's there. And it calls out to me in the middle of the night. "Richard, chocolate." And see, David wonders why his chocolate disappears, you know, from Halloween. And I think to myself, I better just keep all that stuff away because I'm never going to be able to say no. No. See, that's the wrong approach to temptation. Oh, yes, I know I am incredibly weak. But I want to change my approach to temptation so that during the times when I fall into it, not looking for it, but the times when I fall into it and it catches me by surprise, that instead of dreading it and feeling like I'm never going to be able to handle it, that I'm going to start looking for the exit. God, I can hardly wait to see where you will put the exit sign. Consider it joy, my brethren, when you fall into diverse temptations. You're going to get to see God give you an exit. Now, sometimes these parasmos, these trials, are trials. Sometimes it's not temptation. Sometimes it's trials. And I know for some of you, when James says, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations or when you encounter various trials, count it all joy. I know for some of you, this just sounds plain sick. Doesn't it? And how can I be happy about this? I understand. Look at Hebrews chapter 12, verse 11. We did this last Sunday night. I think this really says a whole bunch here. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 11. The writer says this, "Now no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby." Rejoicing in trials. There's a word I want to explain in this verse that I think helps understand a lot of things. It's the word chastening in verse 11. I've often used this, probably in an incorrect way. I've often looked at this as if this chastening was simply God spanking us for things that we've done wrong. But last week, as we went through this passage, I discovered that it's bigger than that. It's not tied to necessarily what you have done wrong. These people that the writer is writing to are people who are being persecuted. They didn't do anything wrong to deserve the persecution. They're just going through hard times. And the writer calls it chastening. Over and over. The word chastening, the Greek word paiduo, it's a verb form from the Greek word pais, which means child. Child. Paiduo means the raising of a child, the training of a child. And yes, sometimes the training of the child involves the big paddle that's stuck up in mommy's closet. It has a big happy face on it. Yes, sometimes the training of a child involves a spanking. Yes. But it's much bigger than that, isn't it? Training your children is much bigger than just a spank every once in a while. It's growing them up. I mean, that's what our heart is as parents, right? It's all about getting our kids from being little teeny babies who are helpless and totally dependent on you and getting them to the point where they are a growing, walking, talking, functioning, responsible adult. One who takes care of themselves. One who takes care of others. It's all about growing up. And that's one of the biggest reasons God allows us to go through trials. I know that sounds offensive to some of you. You think, what, he thinks I need to grow up? Yeah, I do. I need to grow up. And I have this feeling, so does God. He says, no chastening, no maturing, no growing upness, for the present seemeth to be joyous. And yet, James has the nerve to say, count it all joy. It doesn't seem to be joyous. Well, amen to that. No, trials are a bummer. Can I use that word? Is that still an okay word? Yeah, dude. Yeah. Cool. Boss. Oh, trials are horrible. No chastening seemeth for the present to be joyous, but grievous. It's heavy. It's burdensome. Nevertheless, listen to this. Nevertheless, afterward, it yieldeth, it produces the peaceable fruit of righteousness. Now, what is that? It means that trials will produce a result. They will produce a product, and the product is righteousness. Righteousness, making you more correct, making you more pleasing to God, making you more like what God wants you to be. Trials will do that in you. And that is a peaceable thing. It's a peaceable fruit. There's something when you see that God has invested another brick of gold into your life through what I've just been through. This last year's been the hardest year in my life. I'm not going to talk about it because I will cry. But I got to tell you, I see a couple of huge gold bars that God has put in my life. Huge gold bars. But it only comes, he says, nevertheless, afterward it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. See, the benefit from the trial only happens when you allow God to exercise you in it. We have a treadmill at home. And I don't use it a lot. You can tell. And treadmills, and it's a great treadmill. It is the coolest treadmill. It folds up all the way, so it doesn't just take up the whole floor space in the family room. It's great. It's got these computer controls, and you know, it's even got an automatic incline adjust. You press a button, and it makes you look like you're going up a steep hill, you know. And it's got these different programs, so you know you're running along, and then you walk, and then it runs along, and you walk. It's very cool. It tells you how many calories you burn, how many fat calories you burn, in case you're counting the ice cream bars, you know. It's got a little button. You hold your thumb on it, and it will pick up your pulse from your thumb. Major cool. Very scary, too. But I'm going to go, ooh! You know, it is the coolest treadmill. But you know what? I've got to tell you a secret I've discovered. It doesn't do me any good if I never get on it. I have got it there in the house, prominently displayed for anyone who comes by and visits.
Oh, yes, the pastor must exercise. Oh, I think he exercises. Doesn't look like he exercises, but he's got a fine treadmill.
You know what? It does me no good until I get on it. And with the trials in your life, you're going to see no reason for rejoicing. You will gain no gold bars until you say to God, teach me what you want me to learn. What am I supposed to get out of this? I yield to you. But I guarantee you, if you get on that treadmill and you say, God, teach me what you're trying to teach me. Grow me up. And you will see the peaceable fruit of righteousness being produced in your life in 100 different ways. The real work of God. And that's why James says, consider it all joy when you encounter various trials. verse 3. Knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that ye may be complete and entire, wanting nothing. Knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. To test, to examine, to see if something is genuine. The ancient Greeks, when they minted coins, the metal, because the refining processes weren't very advanced, and the metal was pretty soft and malleable. And what would happen is that people got smart and they would start shaving the edges and make the coins just slightly smaller, save up all the shavings, and you got more money. You know, just put it in the mold and there you go. And so there was processes weighing out of the coins to test them, to see if they were genuine. He says, knowing this, that the testing, the trying of your faith worketh patience. Tough times, this is one of the lessons, tough times show how real our faith is. Now, sometimes we don't want to know how real our faith is. We'd like to pretend and be all la-di-da and just, oh, I'm a happy Christian and I say praise the Lord every time I walk into church, you know, and everything. But just don't get it too real here. Just give me ice cream cones and make life happy for me. No, no. Sometimes God allows difficulties in our lives to show us whether or not our faith is real. It's not that God doesn't know. Oh, he knows how real our faith. He knows that I'm the biggest phony baloney in the world. He knows that I'm all talk and no faith. And so sometimes, gang, he throws me into the fire to show me how weak I am in trusting him. And when we fail the test at times, which I do quite frequently, sometimes it's the test, sometimes it's the temptations, and I fail them. You know what? I haven't disappointed God. He knew it all along. You know, Richard, you're getting a little cocky here. I mean, you're not even trusting me. I think you need to skin a few knees here. You know, till you get back to where you're supposed to be. The real value of your faith doesn't show itself when life is easy. It's when life is hard that you see how valuable your faith is. Three preachers sat discussing the best positions for prayer. A telephone repairman was working nearby, happened to overhear the conversation.
Kneeling is definitely the best, claimed the first minister.
No, the second pastor contended. I get the best results standing with my hands outstretched towards heaven.
Oh, you're both wrong, the third preacher insisted. The most effective prayer position is lying prostrate face down on the floor.
The repairman could contain himself no longer. Hey, fellas, he interrupted. The best praying I ever did was hanging upside down from a telephone pole after my safety strap broke. That's when you find out how genuine your faith is. And sometimes it's a hard lesson for us to learn. But we need to learn it. Because sometimes we find out that we don't have a whole lot of what we're talking about. God wants you to have a whole lot. And sometimes he needs to wake me up to the fact that I'm, you know, here I am sitting in the sandbox playing my games. And God has big things for me out there. I'm so content being just lukewarm. And sometimes God has to shake me up. The trying of your faith worketh patience. The word worketh, it means to perform, to accomplish, to bring about, to result in. Trials result in, well, King James is patience. You could translate the word endurance. This is that word I mentioned to you before, hupomone, steadfastness, constancy. In the New Testament, the characteristic of a man who is not swerved from his deliberate purpose and his loyalty to faith by even the greatest trials and sufferings. It means to remain under. I remain under the trial and I stick it out. Endurance. Trials produce endurance. Tough times produce endurance. Your ability to run depends on the kind of training you do. If you never exercise, don't expect to compete in a marathon. I mean, yeah, you could enter the marathon. But, you know, I know what it's like when you haven't exercised in a while. You run about a block or two and you've got to sit down for a while. But when you work out, when you exercise, when you get on the treadmill, your endurance grows. And instead of facing the hard times and saying, I want to quit, I got to go. No, you find that you can stay. And you can run a little bit farther. And you can run a little bit longer. Because you've been working out. You've been exercised by your trials. I mean, that's why somebody like a Johnny Erickson can have such an incredibly fruitful life. You know, a gal who, as a young gal, had a diving accident and paralyzed from the neck down. Totally paralyzed. And yet, she's had the most incredible life, paints with sticking paintbrushes in her mouth. We've got one of her paintings at home. Absolutely incredible. Has written books, has an incredible speaking ministry. Knows the deep things of God. Why? Because she's been exercised by her trial. Well, I could never be. That's just her, you know. No, no, no. She's gotten on the treadmill. Verse 4, but let patience have her perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. The word that's translated perfect means something that's brought to its end, something that's finished, something that needs nothing else to be complete, something that's perfect, something that's full grown, adult, full age, mature. Don't run from growing up. Trials are God's way of maturing us. It's God's way of growing us up. None of us enjoys going through trials. But when we run from the problems, we keep ourselves from growing up. Stay in it. Endure. Listen to the teacup tell its story. There was a time when I was a red lump of clay. My master took me and he rolled me and he patted me over and over and over. I yelled out, "Hey, let me alone!" But he only smiled and said, "Not yet." Then I was placed on the spinning wheel. Suddenly I was spun around and around and around. "Stop it! I'm getting dizzy!" I said. The master only nodded and said, "Not yet." Then he put me in an oven. I'd never felt such heat. I wondered why he wanted to burn me, and I yelled, and I knocked on the door, and I could see him through the opening, and I could read his lips, and he nodded his head and said, "Not yet." Finally, the door did open. Whew! He put me on the shelf, and I began to go, "Oh, that's better," I said. And then suddenly he grabbed me, and he brushed me, and he began to pick me all over. I thought I would suffocate. I thought I would gag. The fumes were horrible. And he just smiled, and he said, "Not yet." And then suddenly put me back into the oven, not the first one, but one twice as hot, and I knew that I was going to suffocate.
And I begged and I screamed and I yelled, and all the time I could see him through the opening, smiling and nodding his head. Not yet. And then I knew there was no hope. I knew that I wouldn't make it. I was just ready to give up when the door opened and he took me out and put me on a shelf. Then an hour later he came and he handed me a mirror and he said, "Look at yourself." And I did. And I said, "That can't be me. I'm beautiful." Let's stand and pray.